Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome everybody to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, and back in touch with his actual voice after the last episode's COVID Dalek impression. And I'm joined on the podcast today by Jack Pitbrook and James Moore. And we're recording literally seconds after the final whistle has gone at St James's Park. Arsenal lost 2-0 to Newcastle. And James, that was pretty handy.
Yeah, and it justified my satisfaction with a draw at Anfield last weekend, didn't it? You weren't having any of that, and now look at it. It's the point that means Spurs only need to draw.
The reason I've survived so long in the media, at the very peak, at the very pinnacle of the football media, James, is I don't worry about things that happened 2 weeks ago. I move on. I move on to the next story, the next piece of brilliant analysis, and the next outburst of English language. Forget about blaming me for stuff. Tell me how you feel now.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by how well Newcastle played tonight. And I mean, I know this isn't a Newcastle podcast and that isn't the thing that we should really be concerning ourselves with. But I was incredibly optimistic about Thursday night, genuinely. And I'm not often about a big Spurs game. But I had no doubt that Spurs would win on Thursday night, really. My worry was that Arsenal wouldn't drop points. And Newcastle tonight, incredibly good. And that does beg the question, what happens next season? You know, Newcastle won't be in Europe. We know they're going to sign at least two or three good players, you assume. Yeah, so Newcastle, I think, actually could be quite a big threat next season on the basis of that performance. And when we mentioned last week how good their form had been in the second half of the season. But I wasn't expecting that. To give a team, you know, a decent-ish team with something to play for, such a torrid evening. I mean, really impressive. And, you know, we don't want to get into all of the whys and wherefores of why it's changed. And none of our opinions on any of that have changed in the last 3 hours, obviously. But yeah, I really can see Newcastle, I don't know if this is a tangent, being right up there next season, top six maybe.
I mean, it's already amazing enough, this podcast. We've only just started. We've now got an extra special guest from out of nowhere, unannounced and unexpected.
And uninvited, if I may.
And true. Totally uninvited. It's Charlie Eccleshare, presumably coming on to now crow about the fact that you always told us that Spurs would finish in the top four.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do that. It was a Zoom and just turn up without anyone knowing. I was saying this to Jack earlier today. I do, and to James. I think Spurs do have the much better team, and especially, you know, Arsenal have had a couple of injuries and they just don't really have the squad to absorb that. And it just felt like they ran out of legs today, whereas, you know, Spurs feel like they've still got ways to go. And I think the only way Arsenal were going to cling on to fourth was if the season ended pretty sharpish, and it just didn't end quite soon enough for them. If it ended two games sooner than 38, they would have clung on. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Newcastle were just such the better team tonight, and it is a bit worrying for kind of you know, just as Chelsea maybe, hopefully, from a Spurs perspective, might be, you know, not quite what they were, Newcastle are another big threat. But yeah, I mean, God, it's just such a huge result. I mean, obviously now the fact that Spurs only need to draw.
Even that, yes, you know, even a draw, Spurs have got the wiggle room. Now, they mustn't go to Norwich and play for a draw. We all know.
You can't play for a draw, Danny. There's no such thing.
Is that right? Explain that to me.
Well, you either try and win or you don't. You can't play for a draw, can you, for 90 minutes?
Well, you start with a draw. You defend what you've had.
Yeah, but you can't just like put the ball to the corner flag for an hour and a half.
You're denying nearly 40 years of Italian football history up until about a decade ago.
That is true.
Absolutely.
Keeping it tight at the back isn't the same as playing for a draw, is it?
Yeah, not taking stupid risks is a very different thing. And to be fair, I can't believe we're having this conversation. To be fair, the way Spurs play without the ball is quite conservative. So, you know,
yeah,
I think they should be fine. They should be fine. But you never know.
Yeah, no, we can make the nervous noises about, you know, Norwich have got nothing to lose. They can play a bit of football. Pookie might have one of his days and all the rest of it. But the truth is, and this is where you can, this is where, get ready for Adam's football cliche show. Spurs can't win at Norwich, you know, with them already relegated. They don't deserve to be in the Champions League. So,
well, they can't draw.
We'll go for it. Yeah. Yeah, if they can't even draw at Norwich, that's true as well. Jack, just to finish about tonight, really. There's a brilliant question, because I've asked the listeners and the subscribers and the readers of The Athletic to send us questions. Gary Neville, this is from Paul Gallagher, who says, Gary Neville says that Spurs support brutalised, that was the word he used, Arsenal on Thursday. Do you think the Spurs fan base genuinely affected the Arsenal team up until the Newcastle game?
I'm not sure. No, I don't necessarily agree with that. I just think Newcastle were much, much better than Arsenal. I have to say, I was kind of really taken aback by how superior Newcastle were. Like the last few times, I haven't watched a lot of them, but the last few times I've seen them, they've shipped 5 against City and 5 at Tottenham. Whereas today, they were so good. Not just, you know, they were really well organised. They were super. They were actually quite a lot of attacking quality going forward. Bruno Guimarães was brilliant. And I don't...
Joe Linton was
brilliant. Joe Linton's great. So I don't think it's just down to... And they looked really well coached as well. You know, I've been a little bit sceptical of some of the Eddie Howe hype train in the last few months, but they did look like a really well organised and coached team today.
I think the telling thing was Newcastle started really well in that first 20 minutes and they were way, way, way on top. And then the balance swung back towards Arsenal maybe for a 10, 15 minute period in the second half. End of the first half and start of the second half. But Newcastle then wrestled control back. And I don't think you'd do that if you were a bad team who were just having a good moment in the game.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to really have something about you to be on top, lose it, and then get it back.
So I was a bit worried in the first half because I thought that Newcastle were going to burn themselves out without scoring. Yeah, they had a lot of pressure in the first half. They obviously, St Maximum had that one quite good chance that Ramsdale saved from. And I was thinking, well, this pressure is all well and good, but they're not going to convert it. And then Arsenal nick one on the break in the second half. So the fact that Newcastle managed to really improve as the 90 minutes went on, they didn't look tired, they didn't flag, and they continued to be more and more of a threat was certainly not something I was expecting at halftime.
I think what's behind Paul's question, Charlie, is whether the hangover... I mean, Spurs did what they had to do on Thursday. They don't deserve extra credit now because Arsenal played poorly. But it is possible that the emotional battering that they got... and they are, you know, statistically the youngest team in the Premier League. Maybe despite the manager saying, no, we just move on now, maybe it wasn't that easy because they never looked comfortable tonight, did they, Arsenal?
Yeah, I think it's a... combination of mental and physical. I mean, that definitely was a really big blow. I mean, of course it was. It was massive because to have it so close and then have it taken away from you. But I do also think physically they were playing, you know, Ben White and Gabriel, who didn't look right from the start, and Callum Wilson was brilliant. You know, you could see he was absolutely
even when he got his teeth knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. But like that was a proper performance where he said, okay, I'm going to test you. And he kept running at them. And Ben White, you know, the own goal comes from being a step slow, really. You know, that's, we don't know if he's fully fit. He may well cut that out. But I think, you know, they've got this thin squad. You know, not playing European football, it's not really sensible to have a massive squad because then you've got players not really playing. But to get away with that, you need to maybe get lucky with injuries or not get unlucky anyway. And I think ultimately they just couldn't quite cope. And, you know, when you've got players like Cedric and Tavares and Elneny and all of that, they're just not really they're a long way from being Champions League level players.
Ultimately, it comes down to them not being able to postpone all their games to when they wanted to play them, I guess. Hello? Is this on?
Yeah, it is. I was waiting for Charlie to respond to that, but he decided that a dignified silence might be best.
Do you think in hindsight things would have gone better for Arsenal if they'd played that game back in January?
I reckon possibly. I mean, look, Charlie wrote the
piece
before
the game.
Can't have gone
worse, can it?
I
mean, it
can't really have been much worse. And as Charlie wrote in his piece last week, Spurs had so many players that, you know, Son, okay, fine, Romero didn't play in the end. Kulusevski and Bentancur wouldn't have been there. Dier was injured as well.
Spurs had more of a changed team.
Yeah.
Also, just on that counterfact, I mean, obviously there's so much with it, but that derby would have been played 3 days before Leicester, and Spurs won the game against Leicester with goals in the 95th and 97th minute. That, you know, that would have been harder had they played a North London derby only 3 days before rather than having a full week off. So, but I mean, who knows? Because Spurs, had they won that in January, which they probably still would have done. I mean, you're still, you know, I still would have made them favourites.
The home team has done very well in the North London derby for the last decade, hasn't
exactly
it?
Yeah. So then, who knows? They might have then had a lead over them that they sort of built on, and that, you know, knocked Arsenal's confidence a bit. We'll never know, but yeah, I mean,
you do also maybe the end of the transfer for both teams. Maybe the end of the transfer window would have been different. You don't know. I mean,
just let me throw in there as well. You know, Arsenal's injuries. I totally get it, and watching them fall down one after the other this evening only exacerbated it. But every team, English football, the Premier League is so brutal that even Manchester City and even Liverpool are running out of players now. I mean, I watched the much more gentler football in Italy, the Italian Cup final. A few days ago between Juventus and Inter Milan, they both had benches full of really expensive international players. No Premier League team has got that at the moment. They're all missing. And Spurs, if you could, against Burnley, I would argue Reguilón, Doherty, Christian Romero, Skip and Kulusevski had half their outfield to first 11 missing.
Mm.
I did like one little detail of it, though, that while he's doing his best to dismantle the legacy, if that's the horrible modern word, of Arsene Wenger, when push came to shove, when the rubber hit the road, it was seven forwards on for the last 10 minutes. Pure Wenger, wasn't it? Absolutely brilliant. With the inevitable result, they were playing seven up front.
I didn't think that was an insane policy because Newcastle, it was maddening, and I'm sure a lot of Spurs fans watching the game will have felt the same. Newcastle go 1-0 up, and their instinct is immediately just to keep throwing players forward. Going hell for leather. And it was only one or two of those injuries that kind of slowed the game down a bit. And I think might have helped them kind of compose themselves a little bit more. And on commentary, Alan Smith, not that he had an agenda, was saying there's nothing to lose for Newcastle. They can keep throwing players forward and going for a second goal. And I was thinking, actually, I don't think they should do that. But it didn't matter in the end.
Yeah, wait till Martin Keown gets to dissect this on the radio during the course of the next couple of days. Jack, we're not going to make any assumptions, but at the moment, Spurs will be hot favourites for the bookmakers to get this fourth place clinched at the weekend. Are they the fourth best team in England?
No, I think they're probably the third best team in England. I think they're better than Chelsea. If you take a step back and look at the, you know, since Conte came in early November, I think they've been better than Chelsea. If you look more narrowly at let's say the last month or two, I think they've also been better than Chelsea. I think Chelsea probably have a stronger squad. They've obviously got a great manager too, but I think Spurs would deserve it if they were to get it. If you'd said, you know, back when they got 15 points from 10 games under Nuno, if you were to say at that point that Spurs would be looking at hitting 70 plus this season, assuming that they win at Carrow Road, you'd say, well, what an amazing season.
If you told me at half-time in the first game against Arsenal that this team will be challenging for the Champions League, I might have retired from this podcast and I can't work with these people. They're clearly bonkers.
Charlie probably did say it then, to be fair.
That said, the one thing that's worth being clear on this is that when they got Conte in, it was with a view to coming fourth. You know, the thinking at the club was that we've got a historic opportunity to do this because Man United are so bad. Arsenal weren't even in their thinking.
Yes.
They thought United having a bad season, there's a real opportunity here. Let's get rid of Nuno and properly get Conte in. And, you know, assuming they can get a point in Carrow Road, famous last words, then that strategy will have been justified.
The thing that Nuno actually did quite helpfully was that the performances were way worse than the results. So when he left, Spurs were actually only 5 points off the top four, which it felt like they were way more. So for a manager as good as Conte, and that's why Spurs and me, and I'm sure other Spurs watchers were thinking, we're only 5 points off. Like, you know, and we've got a manager as good as Conte. This is just about doable. But Nuno did well enough, did badly enough with his performances to mean he was sacked for it to still be salvageable and for no one else to appoint Conte. So that he played his part. But yeah, it's still an incredible, I mean, the performances, the turnaround has just been massive. But yeah, it was just about still doable. You know, it wasn't a complete lost cause. And then Conte, it got close enough for Conte to think, okay, yeah, we can actually do this.
I mean, I think if you look at those first 10 matches, I think we sort of touched on this the other week, but they won 5 and lost 5. Obviously, they beat Man City and won at Wolves, which are both incredible results. And the 5 they lost, and you're right, you know, there's a difference between performance and result, obviously massive. But Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal,
West Ham,
and then Palace is like the outlier. But those other four, West Ham away, Chelsea, Manchester United at home, Arsenal away. I mean, look, the performances were unacceptable, but the results are kind of like, or at least not, maybe not score lines, but losing the games.
Mm.
It doesn't seem insane. And you're right to mention the performance thing, because if they'd performed sort of heroically in losing those games, he would have stayed in a job probably quite a lot longer. I mean, that West Ham game, they weren't great, but they could have easily got a result there.
Or even if you'd flipped it and they'd won three of the more, like, the fact that it was the way it was kind of the perfect storm for him to go.
Yeah, if you put beating Villa at the start of the season and moving Man City to like, one before Man United or whatever it was, and then it kind of feels like you either have a really good result more recently, it would have been really different.
And yet there are always times when you have to cut through the statistical reality of the points gained and the rather more nebulous issue of performances. And sometimes you have to cut off the noise, the white noise of podcasts, 24-hour rolling media and social media, and just have to say, it wasn't working with Nuno. You're all making perfectly good points about this, but your own eyes were telling you, this is not working.
Yeah.
These players, and of course, you know, hopefully he'll bang in 6 at the weekend. You know, Kane spent half the season getting himself up to speed. He normally spends quarter of the season, and he spent half the season getting himself up to speed this time round.
I mean, we should probably praise Daniel Levy to an extent for making that decision, for acknowledging that they got it wrong at the start of the season and acting swiftly. And if they end up getting a point or more on Sunday and qualifying for the Champions League, then despite the absolute farce of last summer, you're going to have to say the last 12 months, you know, going right back to Mourinho getting canned, has been successful somehow.
And thanks to United as well for passing on Conte for that assist.
And for being unbelievably terrible.
And for being utter shit,
I mean, Spurs are going to finish, what, like 12, 13 points ahead of Manchester United? Despite them finishing second last season and then adding Sancho,
Varane,
and Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah. I mean, it is insane underperformance by Manchester United. And that is the other thing, obviously, for next season. They can't possibly be as terrible again.
Now, Charlie, this is a moment on the podcast. And again, we all know that there's still a game to be played and won at Carrow Road. But this is a chance for you to finally say with great certainty, I said, this Sunday, is this a must-win game for Spurs?
No, it isn't. I've been proved right. Liverpool was not a must-win. Brighton was not a must-win. They weren't must-win games. I also said when this international break was restarting that Arsenal would get 15 points from their 10 games. And if they beat Everton, they'd have got 15 points. So yes, it's not a must-win because they have a rival who hasn't been able to keep up the pace with them. Those Brighton and Liverpool games would have been a must-win if Arsenal were beating Brighton and Arsenal were beating Palace and Southampton, but they didn't. I mean, but the thing is, I mean, Spurs are going to get a good old points tally. You know, 68 points has got you Champions League the last few years, and they're going to get into the 70s. So, you know, they've done this in style in the end. And, you know, if they do win, given the goal difference, that's then fairly comfortable. And the goal difference is really telling as well. And this was something I've said before, that Arsenal were winning games almost always by a single goal. They were narrow, nervy wins by and large. I think since the turn of the year, they've won 3 games by more than a goal. And 2 of them were United and Chelsea, which I don't think anyone would call sort of comfortable wins. Whereas Spurs' goal difference, given it was negative coming into that Leeds game at the end of February, that's an extraordinary turnaround. Like they have absolutely battered teams, not just beaten them. They've only had one. Burnley's their first one goal win since City.
Just to double down on a thing I said the other week, I think Spurs are physically, mentally, and technically better than Arsenal. I think Thursday night sort of proved that definitively, and what you saw tonight from Arsenal as well. I'm really surprised to be saying this after everything that's happened this season, but to me that is just so clear. And I'm not one for like ludicrous proclamations, and it could all come back. You know, Spurs messed up on Sunday. Sure. That would probably just prove the mental thing.
That's a separate podcast. We can have that then. Right now, you're just saying.
But to me, it just feels like whatever happens on Sunday next season, and you know, there's a transfer window in between, and we don't know what the two clubs are going to do. But my expectation would be, assuming the two of them spend to form roughly averages over the last few years, I would say Spurs will be head and shoulders above Arsenal next season.
Jack, just I'm gonna throw you the hand grenade so that myself or James don't have to sit there with the pin out in our lap. Make a case for Norwich having everyone wins it. Everyone beats Norwich, don't they? Even with the angelic freedom of not having to worry because you're going down already, and most of these players hopefully be already working on their deals to get away from the club. Surely Spurs will get what they need at Norwich.
Do you want to make a case for Norwich winning?
Or even, yes, I am. Yes, I do.
Well, maybe, I guess you could say that they've spent so much this season constrained by fear, and now that fear is gone. You know, they're through the worst of it. Or maybe they'll think, we want to give the fans one last happy memory of Premier League football, because, you know, they're going to have to wait all the way until, August 2023 for their next bit of Premier League football.
When they pass Fulham on the way down, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Stranger things have happened than Tottenham failing to beat a bad team in an away league game. You know,
Newcastle
in 2016. Is everyone thinking?
Yeah,
they mentioned it on commentary on Sky tonight, didn't they?
Yeah,
though it is really rare, isn't it, for a team for a kind of last day switch to happen?
I would say that was quite different, the Newcastle one, because I know it meant they finished below Arsenal, which is obviously bad, but they'd gone for the title, fallen away, had already secured Champions League. So it was kind of the placing rather than the objective that they missed out on.
There was nothing actually at stake in it except for local bragging rights.
Apart from Conte being the manager, and sorry, Jack, I'm undermining your argument here, but forgive me. You know, you look at Spurs, the goalkeeper, Dyer, Højbjerg, Son, Kane, these are experienced, hardened professionals. It's not like they shouldn't allow they shouldn't allow themselves to get into a situation at Norwich. I mean, that's why the second goal at Newcastle, in some ways, was a relief, because I mean, Arsenal weren't even going to get a draw, and that would have, you know, every away win in the Premier League, even against Norwich, maybe not, but mostly every away win has to be clawed out of the cold hard ground, doesn't it? And you know, last day of the season, all the rest of it.
Well, I think this has been one of the strengths, really, of Conte. I don't want to do too much of a Conte victory lap now, because we don't know what's going to happen on Sunday.
Quite. But
one thing that he's succeeded in, I think one of the most impressive things about Conte to me is that he has been what Daniel Levy thought Mourinho would be. When Daniel Levy appointed Mourinho in 2019, he thought, I'm going to finally get a top manager, a winning manager. He's going to take the team to the next level mentally. He's going to iron out all the kind of imperfections of the past, and he's going to turn it into winners. And obviously it didn't happen because it was Mourinho. But whereas Conte, I feel like Conte is kind of doing those things. He's massively fixed the defence. Tottenham don't concede goals anymore. They look so canny when you watch them play in a way that you've never really seen Tottenham do that, I think, in recent years. And, you know, the Arsenal game was the ultimate case in point. But even the Burnley game, I don't know if we're going to talk about it or not, but the Burnley game was a triumph of canniness, I thought, and game management. So I just think that the idea that Tottenham will somehow mess it up, or out of kind of immaturity or inexperience or complacency, to me at the moment, it feels quite remote.
You'd have to say that the Burnley performance and result would probably speak for a team that are capable of eking out the result they need in a high-pressure environment. Because that wasn't I don't think anyone who was at that game would have had a particularly enjoyable afternoon. It wasn't a great football match. I mean, I definitely think Spurs deserved to win, but it wasn't, you know, a rip-snorting performance with loads of incredible attacking football. It was incredibly tense. But Spurs controlled the game enough to realistically not really be that worried. And I think if I do that again on Sunday, then, you know, I mean, they should be fine.
And it is that point at Liverpool gives them that margin for error, meaning that they don't have to
that
win
that meaningless
it.
Point they got at Anfield.
Charlie, sorry, you missed the start of the podcast when I was bigging myself up. But you, to be fair, Charlie, you were also on that.
Yeah, I was party, very much.
Party bus.
On that point. Yeah, on that point, party bus.
Shrewd point from you.
Yeah. Aren't you both incredibly clever men? Very, very good indeed. Listen, we'll have a quick break and we'll take a deep breath and hope that all the things we talked about, the continuity of the team, the experience of the core of the team, means that, as the television pundits were saying, that that's the important result. The result at St James's was the important result, that they expect whatever happens in North London to happen against Everton, who may, of course, may be fighting for their lives. We just have to hope Spurs can get it across the line. Let's be fair, it's an easier task to say than when they went to Manchester City. Sorry to bring this up again. And to qualify for the Champions League for the first time. But when we come back, we've been inundated. I'm not exaggerating, with questions about tonight, about the season, all sorts of things for what was originally just James and Jack. But Charlie's very kindly joined us as well to take all the glory of saying, "I told you so." And we'll answer as many of those questions as we can for the next 15 or 20 minutes or so. You're listening to a, how can I put this, joyful but still slightly careful view from the lane.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, welcome back to The View from the Lane. We've been recorded just a few minutes after the game between Newcastle and Arsenal ended with a 2-0 victory for the Northerners that sees Spurs now in the driving seat. Those words are almost drying up in my mouth. Spurs in the driving seat for the Champions League place this season for fourth place. I'm joined by James Moore and Jack Pitbrook. And coming under the wire, we tried to keep him out. Charlie Ecclesiastes is here as well. Lots and lots of questions pouring, as I said. We requested questions after we knew the result. And straight away, I'll Jack, the real opportunity here, someone's saying, will Son now win the golden boot? Because I suppose Salah will be resting for the Champions League final, unless there's an amazing sequence of results the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think it's quite hard to guess what the Liverpool team will be at St Mary's on Tuesday night. So I don't know. I think Salah will insist on playing. I expect Salah to score again. But, you know, I can see Son racking up a few at Carrow Road, can't you?
God, I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
Go on.
Son racking up a few at Carrow Road. It'd take a scrappy 0-0 draw.
And it doesn't matter, does it? About
so he can shove the golden boot up his backside. I don't care about that.
I
know that's not great for the conversation.
I don't care about these individual awards. Not, you know, Harry Kane was stood there in the last season with the best assists and the best goals trophies and thinking, oh, these are not real trophies. I'm getting out of here. I'd love it for Son to be the golden boot.
Yeah.
But only if the team has done what it needs to do.
If it's 1-0 to Norwich in the 85th minute and Arsenal winning their game 3-0 and Spurs get a penalty and yeah. Salah hasn't scored.
Yeah.
I don't want Son to take the penalty and do one of his stupid run-ups. I want Harry Kane to score the penalty.
We were talking about this.
I don't want any messing around.
We were talking about this the other day. Do you think if Spurs were winning 3-0, say, and Son was a goal away from getting the golden boot and they got a penalty, do you think Kane would let him have it? Given that Kane
Remember
has
the
Premier League and Spurs goal scoring record to go for.
That is true.
If there were three ups, I think he would give it to Son. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Kane would hand over a penalty kick to a teammate roughly around the time of the death of the Son.
I think he would ostentatiously...
The universe would be imploding. The oceans would be evaporating, the universe would be imploding.
Nah.
And at that point, Harry Kane would say, "Here you go, Sonny, this one's for you." I think until then, it's Harry Kane's putting him in the bottom corner every time.
I think he'd ostentatiously do it, you know, like sort of Gareth Bale muted celebration, like really showy, like, "Hey, I'm humble, you can take this penalty," and make a really big deal. Make sure every single person knows exactly what's happened.
I would be really curious to know. Really curious to see what happened in that situation.
I mean, let's hope we're in a position to find out.
Yeah, let's just get another question on then. Eric Dier is one of the unsung heroes of the season. How far, Jack, since you cover England for The Athletic, how close is he to an England call-up?
Well, we should find out early next week. Gareth Southgate will be announcing his squad for the Nations League. He even got four Nations League games in June. Honestly, I was really surprised he wasn't in the squad in March, as I think a lot of people around Tottenham were, just because I think he's a better player than Cody and Mings and has been playing better than Cody and Mings this season. So I think he should come back into the squad. I probably would expect him to come back in, but you never know.
This is from Rahul Gokhale, who says, "Was Spurs ever in for Bruno Guimarães, who played pretty well today, I thought?"
I mean, can you remember that, Jack, last summer, Bruno Guimarães?
I don't know. Not at all.
It's hard to keep track because there were so many players in that period, especially from the French league, that were being linked with Spurs, but I don't remember him being one. He did look very good, I have to say.
As somebody said on Twitter, and I apologise, I can't remember who it is, so they deserve the credit for this, not me. Tottenham spent big money on the wrong Lyon midfielder.
Yeah, that's a problem for further down the line when he returns with these giant wages and huge transfer expectations from the chairman. And Conte is as liable to put him in the under-21s as you try and rehabilitate him, isn't he? We'll cover that when it gets nearer the time. Christian GG. Now, this is quite difficult because I know you're all very statsed up, but you may not have them quite to hand. Christian, with his slightly nervous head on, asks, "What's our playing record like at Norwich? And also, what's our record for avoiding defeat on the final day of the season away from home?"
Well, Norwich, last time they played them was a draw. Was that 2-2? So that would be enough. Christian Eriksen's last goal for Spurs. I mean, Gareth Bale scored some great goals.
Yeah.
There was that one where he just runs through and no one stops him. What was it in 15-16, James? Can you remember?
They won 3-0, I think. Quite early in the second half of the year, maybe like January, February time. I think Dele Alli scored.
And to be fair, Gigi, while your question is an absolute classic for people looking at football matches from behind their hands and behind the sofa, let's be honest, this Norwich City side has found ways to get heavily beaten again and again and again this season. Look, we kind of touched on this in the first half, but we'll end tonight's podcast, which by definition is walking a tightrope between triumphalism and testing the gods, shall we say, with a question from Catman Stew, who says, "If someone had told you during the last week of the Nuno reign that this is where we'd be with one game remaining, what would you have said to them?"
I like the idea then, is Nuno staying on for the season
No,
we're aware that he's moving on.
No, what I think Catman Stew is referring to is seeing the still smouldering wreckage of Spurs' team and Spurs' early season, and Nuno packing his bag and handing back the company car keys. And what did we think? What we were permitted to, even with, was appointed almost immediately, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that Saturday night game was one of the most miserable experiences I can remember at any ground. I mean, it was just, it was mutiny, basically.
Remind people of the game you're talking about.
Yeah, sorry, this was the 3-0 home defeat to Manchester United at the end of October, and that was when Nuno took off Lucas Moura, brought on Steven Bergwijn early in the second half. And yeah, it was open season. I mean,
it was mutinous, wasn't it?
It was genuinely mutinous, and everyone was getting it. You know, the board, Levy, Nuno, the players. It was just miserable. At that point, obviously, it felt a million miles away. But I do think it speaks to how highly I rate Conte. That as soon as he came in, I did look at the table and think it is only 5 points. Conte is an absolutely world class manager, and they are competing with an Arsenal team who, and at that stage as well, I didn't think Arsenal would sustain a top four push. I thought they'd kind of quite happily, you know, slot into fifth or sixth, because that was their aims really at the start of the season.
I thought Manchester United would improve.
Well, so that was the only thing. That was the thing. I just kept thinking, surely at some point they have to appoint a proper manager.
But Chelsea were top at this point, by the way.
Chelsea were top, noticed. Yeah. I mean, so those three were clearly...
West Ham fourth.
They were on another level. Yeah, I didn't think West Ham were that much of an issue, especially as they were in the Europa League. But I just... It was whether I thought Conte would get them into a position where they would definitely compete. It was just, would United bring in a proper manager? And given they had all those players sort themselves out, and they didn't.
What did you think, James? Did you think that the Spurs could turn this around as they have almost completed the job of doing?
Almost. No, I thought that I would have given them absolutely no chance of doing that. I mean, I would have expected an improvement, and I probably would have thought it would be one of those seasons where they'd come good at the end, but just fall short, which could still happen, I guess. Although it would be a drop off at the end now, rather than just coming up short, yeah. I guess. But yeah, I mean, I, and you and I, Danny, have been, I'd say, moderately critical of Conte.
Yeah,
at times,
in the last
absolutely.
Few months. I'm not.
I don't think we've been afraid to stick the boot in once or twice. And you know, I stand by a lot of the stuff we said, by the way. I think some of his conduct after certain matches
His antics are what annoyed me. Not the way he sets the team up and things like that. Largely, it's been his antics.
Completely counterproductive. But I mean, it's, you know, and I said before, it's not often I'll be like massively positive or confident about Spurs. But to me, they haven't got the depth, and that is obviously a big problem. That is a big problem that they'll need to deal with this summer. But I don't think the starting 11 is that far away from like peak Pochettino. I don't think. I mean, I'm expecting to get very, very close to that this summer, or even to pass that. I mean, that would be my expectation, because I think the team is very good.
Jack, have you got any more truths to spit to us?
The thing that stands out to me is not so much the comparison with the Man United game at the end of October, but if you look at where Tottenham were almost exactly 1 year ago, that was the week where they had the infamous game, the home game against Aston Villa, where there was real mutiny in the stadium with the fans returning. Daniel Levy was trying to buy off the fans with his talk about Tottenham DNA and all this stuff, which, you know, didn't really prove to mean anything at all. You know, people were still furious about the Super League. Harry Kane was trying to engineer a move away. Tottenham didn't have a manager. They'd just been turned down by Hansi Flick. There was no real sense of what they were going to do next. And obviously, since then, you know, it has not been steady improvement since then at all. They went through a very difficult summer, appointed the wrong manager, and then fixed it kind of 5 months down the line. But to take a step back and look at the whole 12 months from then to now, the difference between the way that Tottenham finished the last season and, assuming no disaster at Carrow Road, the way that Tottenham are due to finish this season is just, you know, the club is clearly heading in a completely different direction, which is, you know, says a lot for, you know, Daniel Levy's made some awful decisions in the last few years, not least joining the Super League and appointing Mourinho and appointing Nuno. But this is really how quickly football can change. You make so many bad decisions and you get one decision this right, and suddenly everything else changes.
He was also lucky that Nuno was so bad a decision that he was sackable by the end of October.
It was clear, yes. There was no grey area, wasn't
Yeah, it wasn't like, he is sort of doing okay. Maybe if we stick with him results. It was just so, you know, that was a gift. You know, he got that. He got lucky with that because it was so bad. It turned out well.
And if they'd got like a kind of, I think about this a lot. If they'd got somebody who, you know, one of the people that they'd wanted at the start of the window when they discarded Nuno, particularly Flick and Ten Hag, the big Steve Hitchin choices at that point, who I think would have done a kind of, they would have played better football, they would have been better with the media, they would have like had a sense of like a rebuild, where are we going to be in 3 years' time? I think Nuno could never deliver because he had this kind of glorified caretaker contract. Then I think that, I mean, look, I don't know how it would have gone. I imagine it would have gone like kind of placid, steady improvement, unspectacular. But they wouldn't have got Conte in November, would they? If they'd got Flick or Ten Hag, Flick or Ten Hag would almost certainly still be there. And would Tottenham have come fourth? I mean, would Tottenham be in the position they are now? Probably not. Maybe sometimes you've got to make a bad decision to make a good decision.
Maybe they wouldn't have been in quite as good a position as they are now in this reality, on this timeline. But I don't think, with a good coach from the start, I don't think they'd have been too far off. And you know, you watch Arsenal. I mean, Arteta's obviously been there 2.5 years. So that's his team playing his football. And to be honest with you, he has done a good job because those players are not great. I mean, that is not, if you look at that team, go through the Arsenal team, that team is, like I said, so far behind the quality of the Spurs players. So you have to say Arteta's done a good job.
I would.
But I don't think Spurs would be too far behind that, would they? Surely.
Yeah, I think there would have been, assuming United in this alternative reality are as bad as they've been, then I think the opportunity would have been there for anyone. But who knows?
Look, assuming, as I say it for the umpteenth time, and I apologise almost for repeating myself, assuming it all goes well at Carrow Road, I don't think I'm far off from saying that, even if you're allowing for all the things you said there are right, James, this is going to be one of the more remarkable modern seasons for Tottenham Hotspur. If they can turn the chaos of the summer, never mind what happened with Nuno, but the chaos of not having a manager for 3 months, one of the top teams in European football doesn't have a manager at the club for 3 months. If they can turn that into a Champions League place, then they are indeed the special club. But deep, deep, deep in my flinty old heart, I still believe that they are. And of course, we said a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, well, they've got to win all their games. It turns out they don't have to win all the games now. That doesn't mean there's any less pressure on this game against Norwich. And so we'll be back, we'll come back on Thursday, and we'll be previewing the Norwich game. I suspect we'll have calmed down, be like slightly more nervous than we shall see. And if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up right now to read all of our articles on Spurs, as well as everything else on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for just £1 a month for 6 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, James. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Newcastle United. We'll be back on Thursday. Thanks you lot for listening.
The Athletic.